Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, let me grab the headphones. I'll get dialed into the studio. Get these dogs to shut up. Oh, goodness. I better close the window or the neighbors are going to get mad. Hope the guests call in tonight. I wonder if anybody's going to call in. Well, let's do this thing.
It's Rated G Radio, and this is your host, Garrett Miller.
Holy cow, do we have a great show for you tonight. If you are new to Rated G Radio, folks, you have a real treat tonight with Greg White, who is a celebrity chef, an author, and so much more. He's going to be joining the show in just a couple of minutes. Just to give everybody a real quick preview, because most of the time, you know, like 99% of the time, we are live at 10 p.m. East, 7 West. Tomorrow night's show, our very special Friday night dance party, is going to be at an early time to accommodate our guest, Mr. Eric Kamen, who is a flamenco guitarist, and he'll be calling in from somewhere on the East Coast, and we're going to start the show at 8 p.m. East, 5 West, and we'll have him on for the first hour of the two-hour broadcast tomorrow night, and then in hour two, it'll be an all-request listener dance party. So if you want to start out your Friday night a little earlier than we usually do, just to keep that keep that in the back of your head, and of course follow the show, because you'll get the update email and text, or however you choose to be notified ahead of time, so you can always be logged in. But without further ado, let's get our celebrity guest introduced here on the show tonight. Mr. Greg White, welcome to Rated G Radio. Thanks for being part of the show.
Garrett, thanks for having me.
Wow. This is
that's
really
my standard
an honor.
Guesting on a radio show greeting.
Well, I love it. You need to trademark that. I need to tell you, I am a huge foodie, and I've been, following you on Facebook for a little bit of time now, and I am always impressed by your posts and your pictures, and even though I might have just eaten a meal, you post something and I want to go eat it.
Well, so, thank you for following along. I love that. I'm not a great photographer, so I do try to back up every picture with a few words. Just in case the sauce is blurred, I'll describe the sauce to try to tempt you to go taste it.
Well, I think we're going to have to institute some type of Facebook limits on how tempting your pictures or descriptions can be, because that alone will have me put on the 50 pounds that I've lost in the last 2 years, and I don't need to put it back on. But your pictures are great, and I am excited that you are part of a new show on TNT. We're going to talk to you about all of that, but before we get to the super, super fun stuff, I always say, let's turn that clock back and go back in time to when you were a little kid, and tell me about yourself and growing up, and who you were as Greg the toddler and Greg the adolescent.
Yeah, I was born in Lubbock, Texas. We couldn't afford the accent. That's why you can't hear it. And so I don't have it. And I was born in Lubbock, Texas, and then I was raised all around. I went to 13 different schools in 11 years.
Wow. Was your dad military, or?
He wasn't, which is kind of funny since I ended up in the Marine Corps, but no, he wasn't, and we just kind of hopped around. And what that did for me, besides guaranteeing that I would constantly be in therapy, was it gave me the good fortune of being exposed to a lot of different things and a lot of different cultures. We lived in Utah for a while. Don't ever do that. We lived in New Orleans, and that was fantastic. That's where I really learned about food. When you're swallowing raw oysters at 12 years old in the French Quarter while strippers swing through the windows of a bar on Bourbon Street, you pretty much get a nice, good sociological food background.
There you go. Now, what do you think of raw oysters at 12?
I loved them. I think there's so many things about food that people react to, and one of those is texture, the temperature, the texture, and then the flavor, and, of course, the sight. What they say, it was a brave man who ate an oyster, but it took a strong man to get it open, and I figure if you're hungry enough to get that open, you deserve that reward. My mom did raise us with the strict rule that I think a lot of people, I hope, get raised with, which is we weren't allowed to say we didn't like anything until we tried it. So I certainly was willing to try it, and now I can boast that I eat everything.
Wow. Because as somebody, as an adult, now I can't say that I did that as a kid, Greg, but to be honest with you, but as an adult, I will tell you that I have now tasted foods that I swore I would never, ever taste just because of the same thing your mother said. Don't say you don't like it unless you've tried it. And one of the things that I can say that I've tried, and I've tried it twice, so I can say it's off the plate now and I'm never going to try it again, oysters.
What was it? Was it the texture?
I don't know. I just didn't enjoy the experience. And you can put
did
as much.
Did you chew or just swallow?
I think I just swallowed.
Oh, you got to give it a chance. Have a couple of munches.
Okay. Well, I put the lemon juice. I did the horseradish. I did all, and I like the lemon juice a lot. And I like the horseradish, or I like the cocktail sauce, or whatever it is that they put on it when at the restaurant that I was at. Didn't enjoy it though. So I'll tell you that. Now, on the flip side, though, recently, I was at a restaurant in downtown L.A., and the people that I was having lunch with, they said, you have got to try the octopus. And I said, there is just, that's just not going to happen. And they looked at me like it was from a different planet. And they said, octopus is one of the most delicious things you could ever eat.
Yeah, I hope you tried it.
Try this. I did. And you know what? Phenomenal.
I know. I love it, too. You know, they boil it before they grill it. They have to boil it for a while to get it tender mm-hmm. enough, and then they grill it. It is coming up on the list. It's rumored to be, I haven't done enough studies on this, but I hear that it's one of the most intelligent animals next to dolphins.
Wow.
So some people are putting their tentacles down about that. But I do love it, too. I love the char that it gets on the grill, and I love it on the salad. I love it in pasta. I think I'm having it Saturday night, actually.
Well, there you go. So when you were growing up in New Orleans or any of the other 11 places that you grew up in, did you find foods that you were like, okay, I've tried this, Mom, and now we're not trying this again?
You know, we had some fun experiences. Like, granted, they were out of a can. We had Asian nights where my mom would make, she would try to make some sort of Asian food. Usually it was Chungking Chinese food in a can. But
sure.
She taught us how to use chopsticks. So I'm so grateful that I was 6 years old sitting around with my brothers in our bathrobes around the coffee table in the living room eating, you know, probably cold water chestnuts, thinking it was exotic.
Uh-huh.
And it was. But she taught us how to eat with chopsticks. I was probably, you know, eating with chopsticks by 5 or 6. And so now I can, and that helps me a lot because I really don't want to look clumsy.
Okay, so how is it picking up the chopsticks? Because I will find that if I have a lot of effort involved, I can kind of look like I'm remedially not really getting it, but am trying to pass it off.
Well, if I can't do something, I'm going to admit to just not doing it. And I think if you're with somebody that can do it well, ask them for the lesson because it's a really simple technique here. You just clamp one down,
mm-hmm.
and the only one chopstick moves. The upper chopstick goes up and down like tap, tap, tap. So you might just admit you need some, you know, you need a little guidance and ask one of your lovely dining companions. I'll teach you how to use chopsticks.
That's I'm open
next
for that.
Week.
I love it. There we go. There we go. So we'll eat octopus with chopsticks.
We're going to eat oysters with chopsticks.
Oh, okay. You know what? I would try it again. It would not. I will put it up there with bungee jumping, but I would try it again for you, Greg.
Yeah, I bungee jumped. I'm not going to do that again.
Okay. Well, see, there's an I'm not going to. So good. You've done it. And
it was nude night illegal bungee jumping. All I can tell you is that the first guy that I'd already jumped and the first guy that went down naked screamed all the way down. And from the top, we looked down, he's dangling down there, and we said, dude, what is the problem? And he said, pull me up. So we pulled him up. He was a hairy individual, and apparently the rope got caught on his descent and just like zipped up.
Oh.
I was with my best friend who's a doctor, and he was able to diagnose the case, and the official diagnosis was scrotal burn.
Oh,
so that ended
goodness
my
gracious.
Bungee jumping career. Yeah,
yeah,
don't do that.
No. Yeah, I'm not going to be doing any bungee jumping. But going back to as a kid, what did you do for fun growing up?
Well, I had three brothers, and so we played a lot. We watched black and white television. We'd be banned from it, and our parents would steal all the knobs off. And when they'd leave and we weren't supposed to watch TV, and we'd find pliers and pull the TV on, and that's where I sort of fell in love with entertainment. I was watching old television shows, and then we'd of course turn the television off and fan it down so it'd be cool by the time my parents got home.
Very, very smart.
And then we put on plays and things like that, and We would write and play all the parts, and my older brother Brad is a pianist, and he would kind of play along. I mean, we weren't an act or anything, but
right.
we just kind of hung out, you know, just typical old Southern stuff. We might run around a pond, a neighbor's pond, and catch little frogs. And I read a lot and sort of escaped and learned that there were other worlds out there besides the 13 schools that I'd been in. And just let my imagination stretch. And then I was writing by the time I was 15.
Okay, cool, because I wanted to get to the point where we can talk about your book, but I wanted to go creatively, you know, how did you start to get inspired to write, and as you started to write, and, you know, usually people who start to write, they like a certain genre, and they've read every book there possibly was on that particular area. Did you have a favorite topic that you like to read about?
I did. I loved as a kid, I loved the humor that I would find in Mark Twain and William Faulkner and all of those great Southern writers. And then I wanted to write like that. I wanted to write folk family comedies and dramas, and that's sort of what my first interest was. And then in college, I was the editor of my college paper, and that was my first sort of exposure to the business side of writing. And then I didn't write. I moved to New York after college, and I was an actor. But then there was a whole bunch of time there in the middle that I think we're going to talk about.
Well, okay, so when did you decide that you liked cooking?
You know, as a little kid, I didn't do it at all, you know, but then as I was a teenager, as I got to be a teenager, I started making little things. The first thing that I really saw being made that I thought, oh, I can totally do that, a friend's mom made a grilled cheese sandwich, and I watched her. I'd never made one. I'd really probably only had sloppy ones, I don't know, but she really carefully buttered the outside of the bread, and it was freaking me out. And I said, what are you doing buttering the outside of the bread? And she said, well, that's how I get the crust. And then she sliced a tomato really thin and added that to the cheese. And then I watched it in the skillet when the butter bubbled up from the laid down piece of bread, and then she flipped it over, and I saw how brown and crusty it was with the cheese kind of oozing out the sides. And then when she cut it, I heard that crunch, and I'd never had a sandwich like that, but I'd watched her make it. So I ran home from that person's house and made that sandwich.
Holy cow. I want a toasted cheese sandwich, Craig. That's kind of a sexy story.
That was, you know, I think a grilled cheese sandwich is a lot of people's comfort food, but it's really my comfort food.
I love it. Okay. Well, okay, so you went, help me on the timeline here. So did you go to college and then join the Marines, or did you join the Marines and then go to college?
I did it in the middle.
Or?
I was, after my freshman year of college, my best friend, who's still my best friend today, he lives here in California as well, he had an Air Force Academy appointment, and we just finished our freshman year, and he called me and said, you know, we were just talking about our year, and he said that his eyes had gone bad from the stress of the Air Force Academy, and he couldn't be a pilot, but he wanted to finish out his commitment in the Marine Corps because his dad had been a Marine. And he said, you know, I'm going to go to boot camp. I'll be back in time for my sophomore year. It's the summer. And really all I heard in that conversation was summer and camp. And I said, I'll go with you. I love boots. And he thought I was crazy, but I went, and I went down to the recruiter, and I thought I was doing the Marine Corps a favor. I didn't think about anything. I thought, you must need people. And so I walked in, and they probably scratched their head. I had a shag, and I'm sure a Kiana shirt, some bell-bottoms over platform shoes in the 70s. And they gave me my physical. First, they pulled out a contract, and they asked me, you know, are you gay? And I wasn't about to have that discussion then, so I just lied on the paperwork, and I said, no, I wasn't. The guy was incredible. The recruiter was just, he looked like G.I. Joe, like he hopped off the poster from the recruiting walls. And, you know, he said, have you ever had any homosexual thoughts? And I thought, dude, I'm having one right now. But I lied and signed all those papers, and then I thought, that's over. Let's go do this thing. I'll even wear the green clothes. And so I went to the physical, and I didn't weigh enough. I was 14 pounds shy. And they said, we can't sign a waiver and let you in because it comes if you get hurt, it'd come back to us, and we'd be in a lot of trouble. And so he said, but you have 8 days. Go try to gain weight. And I said, I can't gain weight. I've never gained weight in my entire life. But my best friend, Dale, had been on the wrestling team, and he knew how to gain or lose 5 pounds to get in the next class. So we ate for 8 days. We took, have you ever seen those Charles Chips potato cans? They're a giant drum of potato chips. They come in like a big barrel. We emptied that out, and we filled that can with Nutter Butter cookies and Twinkies and peanut butter sandwiches and bananas, and we'd drive around visiting our friends, and he'd say, he'd point to the can and say, eat a banana. And I'd say, oh, man, I can't eat a banana. I just ate that sandwich. And he'd say, look, I'll eat a banana. If I can physically eat a banana, you can eat a banana. He became a doctor. He also gained 18 pounds during that process.
Oh,
he was so pissed at me. But I did start gaining a little weight, so we went. The night we were supposed to ship out, they weighed me again, and I was 3 pounds shy. And the Navy guy that was weighing us, he said, I can't sign you in. I can't. You're 3 pounds shy. So I thought it was over. I was ready to give up and all that. And, you know, thank God they hadn't shaved my hair yet. And so the recruiter took me to the hardware store, and he took a lead pipe, and he hammered it flat. And then he taped that to my skin. And you weigh in just your underwear. We went right back to that medical station, and I took off my pants, and I'm, you know, to me it's like the telltale heart is beating in my underwear because I'm thinking, why can't these guys see that I've got this huge weight in my crotch? And I kind of waddled up on the scales, and I weighed enough, and I got in.
Oh, my God. That is
and
the
I spent
best
6 years,
ever.
And I ended up a sergeant in the Marine Corps.
So you really spent 6 years in the Marines after your first year of college?
I'm going to make you eat that oyster, Garrett. I can force you to do things.
I don't think you're going to have to twist my arm that hard, because I think when I'm with you and you're going to, quote-unquote, make me eat that oyster, you will have it prepared so delicious.
Is that a euphemism, make you eat that oyster?
Exactly. There you go. But I think that it'll be that good that I'll say, absolutely, Greg, whatever you say, and it shall be done. But seriously, where were you going to college?
I was going to college in North Texas State and in Denton, Texas, and then did finish in time. And I actually went to officer candidate school as well in Quantico. So I kind of went to boot camp three times. The memoir that I've just written, The Pink Marine, is just about the 13 weeks in boot camp.
Wow. Okay. Well, so tell us as much as you're willing to spill about the Pink Marine, because I am fascinated by your story. Because, number one, it just floors me that you've gone to college for a year. So, you know what? I like boots. I could do the summer camp thing. And
aren't
then you're there for 6 years.
I know. Well, the pitch from the summer camp, I thought I was going to end up with, you know, one of those hand-laced wallets or a lampshade. I thought I would sharpen my archery skills. I learned a lot. You know, it's interesting because I had lied to enter, obviously, to enlist. I really thought that I was doing the Marines a favor. They did me a favor. I have to be honest. I was really uptight about being gay and being in the military because at that time, it was before Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You were either beaten or imprisoned or whatever and ruined. And so I was nervous the entire time I was there. And then as it never got easier, but I was able to see that almost everybody in there with me was trying to overcome something. There were guys that I wasn't trying to overcome being gay. I was just trying not to get beat up or arrested.
Right, right.
There were guys in there that needed to lose 50 pounds. There were guys that chose boot camp over going to prison. And so you're all in one room for 13 weeks, and you really learn a lot about those people, and you learn a lot about yourself. And that's what I did. And so that's why I wanted to write this book just about those 13 weeks.
So in your – one of the things that you shared with me before, and if this is part of the 13 weeks, forgive me for going back, but it just boggles my mind that you said that you completed boot camp essentially three times. How does that work?
Well, because then after I got out of boot camp, I went to a training school in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and then I went back to college, and I was in the reserves where I'd go in and report once a month for a weekend, and I was in a play in school. I used to act as much as I could, and I was in a play at school, and I needed to grow my hair just a tiny bit. It was just outside of regulation, and I'd almost made it through the entire weekend without anybody yelling at me to get my hair cut, but I heard that the commanding officer on the base was looking for me, and he was going to cut my hair. And he was running around with a pair of scissors calling my name. I didn't even know the guy. And so sure enough, it was like 6 o'clock on Sunday. I thought I was almost scot-free. I could just walk out the door to my car and leave and do the play. And then I was happy to cut my hair to be in regulation. But he cornered me, and he had those scissors, and he was threatening to cut my hair. And I said, sir, please, I'm in a play in school, and I really need to have this haircut. And he dropped the scissors and said, are you in college? And I said, I am. He said, have you ever thought about going to officer candidate school? And inside, I said, look, if it'll stop you from cutting my hair, I'll go to your officer candidate school. And so I did, and I switched. I went to Quantico and became an officer in the Marine Corps, and then I resigned my commission and resumed my commission, my non-commissioned officer, my sergeant status, and finished my time as a sergeant. And then I moved to New York and studied acting. It was sort of my graduate school. Kate McGregor Stewart, I don't know if you know her. She's out here in L.A. now.
Wow. So do you have, out of your time in the Marines, do you have any portion of that 6 years of your life or a portion of that 13, let's go back to that 13 weeks because that really talks about your book. Do you have any, like, really, really high moment that you just felt really proud of, either as an accomplishment or maybe a relationship that you made with somebody who's a friend?
There are several examples. I get to highlight several of those stories in the book, and I'm happy to share. You know, I think the biggest thing for me was anything physical. I hadn't run a mile. I'm from Texas. If 7-Eleven is on the corner, we drive to it, and we drive a big car, and we drive alone. If we have a friend, they drive their own car.
Uh-huh.
And so I had not run 50 feet, and that was what my friend was really concerned about. He said, you know, you've never run a mile. They're going to kill you. And so it was really difficult to do because also you're only 18, and I was only 18, and I certainly wanted to not just hide the fact that I was gay because I didn't want to be less than. I wanted to be equal to. But I'd never done these physical things, and so part of my not getting busted was to just try it. And so I was thin, as you know. I had to tape the lead weight to my crotch. So my body is built for running. So I ran and did that as best I could. I had some injuries. I had some metatarsal fractures in my feet because you run in boots. Boots don't look so attractive once you figure you got to run in them. And all the marching and the drilling. And you just don't have adequate equipment and rest. So it's they build you up, but they break you down, and then they build you up again, and then they break you down again.
But
I think just anything, just I think running 3 miles in under 18 minutes, you get a perfect physical fitness score if you can do 20 pull-ups and do a certain number of sit-ups in time and then run 3 miles in under 18 minutes. So I got a 294, which was amazing to come from zero to 294 in that short period. And then I think the biggest thing was they promote, there's 70 of us in the platoon, and they promote 7 guys to the next rank meritoriously at the end. And you don't know who it is. It's always a surprise. And I was as shocked as anybody when I was one of those 7 promoted.
Wow. Well, congratulations for that.
Thank you. I mean, that's kind of promotion usually you have to sleep with somebody for, and that just didn't happen.
Well, there's a little – you never know. I mean, you just never know.
But I'm no idiot. You know, I took a shower with 70 other guys for a whole summer.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. So when you got – okay, after the 6 years, was there a deciding factor for you that you said, you know what, I'm not going to re-up again, I'm going to go do something else?
Yeah, the reason that I pursued officer candidate school, I was going to go to law school. I was going to serve in the JAG Corps, which is the judge advocate group for the military. And I took the LSAT and the LSAT exam, and I thought, if this is anything like law school is going to be, I just can't do it. I would so much rather move to New York and study acting. And so I that's why I resigned my commission. I didn't go to law school. I finished my time out in the Marines, and then as soon as that was over, I moved to New York. I could have gone on to New York and, you know, gone to a reserve center there, but the fear of God was put in me about getting on the subway, and so I didn't know how I would get to the reserve center.
Isn't that
really
funny, the limitations you put on yourself, you know, on things that you don't even know about? So can I share one thing with you? And I know this is about you tonight, but I want to share this one thing about you because it totally relates to the story you told. I chose not to go to college right out of high school. I went to a trade school instead because I was sure, Greg, right as I'm sitting here talking to you tonight, that if I went to college, I had to join a frat, and the frat would fraternity during Hell Week would make me eat raw liver, and I just said, I can't do that. So that was the legitimate reason why I did not go to college the first year out of high school. I went to a trade school instead because I said, nobody's going to make me eat raw liver. Isn't that silly?
Peer pressure's tough. Did you finish the trade school?
I finished the first year of trade school, got what I wanted to out of it, and realized I don't care if I have to eat raw liver or not. I need more education. So I moved back home, and, you know, the rest, shall we say, is history. But it was one of those experiences that, you know, you unless you ask the question or you, you know, try to do a little research, you limit yourself on the possibilities and options that you give yourself in life.
Absolutely. And by the way, I don't know how you did in that first year, but if I have anything that's broken, I'm going to call you and see if you have enough skills to fix it.
It was for architectural drafting, so I could build you a building, and then you could hire people to come and fix it. So, you know, we'd be good. You know, that's fine. That's fine. So you moved to New York,
and it's there's still things that I face today that are challenges. You know, that I might not want to face or not want to do. Phone calls. I think we've all had phone calls on our list that we dreaded, and then as soon as we make it, we feel better, right? And you think,
absolutely,
why did I get so worked up about, you know, calling my grandmother? I'm just kidding about that. I love my grandmother. But the point is, I think we do get weird.
We all have.
We let society beat us up, and bullies are bad. And I'm horrified that it's still going on. But I'm glad that there are organizations to help people look for help if they are getting bullied. I hate that those stories are still fresh.
It makes no sense. You know, and you read about these things or you see it on the news, and you're like, you know, and I think, honestly, you know, I think we're lucky, Greg, because we live in Southern California, and I think even though it still probably goes on in the schools in some capacity for this group or that group or whatever label that people are putting on other people, I think it's much less prevalent here than it is maybe in the Midwest, or just, I throw that out there just blindly, but there are a lot of places out there where this is still going on a regular basis, and you go, this is 2014, almost 2015, people, what the heck are you thinking?
Yeah,
but that's the way those communities really are still run.
Well, that's why we need to use our voice and the platform of things like your show and my book and take advantage of the fact that we live here in Los Angeles, and we're here, you and I are both safe. I live a great lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I am out and proud, and I get to write stories and books. And you know, I just went on the Mark Burnett reality show On the Menu that airs on TNT October 3rd. I was out in my auditions. I'm out on the show because I want maybe somebody that is listening or reading or watching in Alabama or Illinois that isn't safe knows that there's a glimmer. My dear friend, the comedian Georgia Ragsdale, used to have a bit in her act where she said, you know, if you ever wonder why there's so many gay people living in New York and Miami and L.A. and San Francisco, it's because God looked down at the U.S. and said, gay people, go to the sides. And now we need to spread that strength. And with marriage equality, that's helping.
Yeah.
And with Don't Ask, Don't Tell over, that helps. And the more tolerance and acceptance we get, the less we'll hear of stories where somebody's afraid and bullied. They're still going to happen, but I hope that they use examples. I used Armistead Maupin's book, Tales of City, when I was growing up. I thought, oh, my God, there's a life out there. There's the possibility that I can, you know, that there's a bigger, more exciting, accepting world.
So when I want to go back and talk about the new Mark Burnett show that you are on starting October 3rd on TNT. But just talking about the book that you were reading, when did you know that you were different or special or not like your brothers? And what emotionally did you go through as a kid?
I probably knew early on. I would probably say 6, 8 years old, and I didn't really act on it or do anything until I was in high school. But I never doubted it, or, you know, I did try. I did try to eat that oyster, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew pretty much what I was comfortable with, and then I just went along with whatever society had going on at the time. And I think I was pretty lucky and pretty fortunate to have a really accepting family, incredibly accepting friends. And then, you know, moving from Dallas just straight to New York, and and then on to LA, I've had a pretty pretty comfortable surroundings.
Love that. Love that. Well, let's talk about the new show On the Menu that you are part of. What can
I
you
recommend
tell us
going
about
on a reality show highly, especially
cool.
your Mark Burnett show. His crew is amazing.
So, the show is going to be talking about cooking. I'm not going to ask you what you made or anything like that, but what is the general premise of the show? How does the show work?
I really like what they're doing. You know, you read articles and see people discussing the disconnect that goes on with people today because everybody's glued to a device or a tablet and nobody's looking up from their plate and talking. This is kind of an interesting thing, what Mark Burnett has done with this show. It's called On the Menu. The four home cooks go on the show each week, and they create a dish for a specific national restaurant. And my week is the first week. The premiere episode is Chili's. And the winning dish of that episode goes on that restaurant's menu the next day. And what I love about that is that's a connection. A viewer or anybody watching or hearing about it knows that something that they saw is actually physically gettable in that restaurant the next day. And so we're bringing things that just, you think they just flitter on the air for a minute, but they're going to stay around.
That is very cool. So have you always said, you know what, I can't wait to be on a reality TV show after all of the different things that I've been on? How did you decide that this was going to be the one that you were going to go for?
I knew that I needed to do interesting things to market my book. You know, selling a book is hard. Selling a memoir is hard, unless you're famous. You know, I didn't know exactly what kind of a marketing platform I was going to have access to, and it was sort of an innocent thing. I was in Montreal. I go between here and Montreal. My other half lives in Montreal, so I'm there a lot. And I got an email one day that said, they found me from my blog. They said, hey, do you eat the things that you, and cook the things that you write about on your food blog, Eat Greg Eat? And I said, well, yeah, of course, how would I write them? And they said, well, do you want to be in a TV show? And I said, sure. So I auditioned on Skype there, and then I auditioned on in person in LA. And it's hard to get on a show, by the way. They put 5,000 people on tape, and then
wow.
they had 10 shows, they had 40 spots. And I kept getting a call, you know, you're still in. And it was an awesome experience. I didn't know if I was going to be able to say the name of the book. They don't have people on there so that they can promote things. They're promoting their own thing. And
sure.
So I certainly didn't go in there with that agenda. And but on day one, Ty Pennington, who's the host, we were just chatting on the air, and he asked something about my writing, and I told him about the book, and I told him the first story. I told him the opening story, and as I prepared something, and so that was really fun, and it's really intense. You know, I had never cooked a mass amount of dishes, as you'll see on the show, but you know, rose to the occasion, and I just like I finished writing the book, I used everything that I learned in the Marine Corps to finish every task. I use that stuff now. I have to use the stuff I learned in the Marine Corps to wake up at 4 a.m. to get on a plane. You know, finishing my book was really hard. There were times when I was looking, you know, it's 100-something thousand words, and it's exhaustive, and just to push through and and craft and hone was really something that I'd never done. You know, I have a TV writing background, and it's a whole different game. And I was so lucky that I got to say the name of my book on the TV show, and I made it through. And I would do it again in a heartbeat.
I think this is very cool. We're at the halfway point of the show, folks. Greg, if I play a song, can I twist your arm and have you come back after the song and talk more about your work?
Yes, and I hope some people call in and ask me really personal questions.
Really? Okay, so if you would like to ask Greg really personal questions, the number is 323-657-1493. It pops up on your computer screen when you're logging into the show. Press 1, because I've got a bunch of people who are listening, but you haven't pressed 1. That just means you want to listen on your phone, which is certainly okay. But if you call 323-657-1493, we'll put you on the air with Greg, and you can ask him the most embarrassing questions right after this. Talking food tonight, and our celebrity chef Greg White is with us, and his book The Pink Marine is coming out soon, and he's also on the new Mark Burnett show on TNT October 3rd called On the Menu. Greg is willing to take your calls, and you can ask him anything you want, even about playing polo. If you call 323-657-1493, we've got about 20 minutes left. For those people who are calling in right now, you have to press 1 if you want to ask a question. Otherwise, I just assume you're just calling to listen from your phone, which is a great option. But Greg,
and I hope
back.
Everybody follows me on Twitter on either Eat Greg Eat and Instagram, Eat Greg Eat. My Facebook page is Eat Greg Eat. If you just type Eat Greg Eat in something and I'll pop up. But I do have a lot of fun. I have probably a little bit too much fun on both of those things.
Now, what kind of fun do you like to have on your social media accounts?
I like to write jokes, and I'm a comedy writer. I've written television for over 20 years, and it was hard to switch from script form to the long form of the book. But by God, I could figure out an M16. I can figure out how to switch from jokes to a book. But the Instagram, I tend to be a little more careful with the pictures I'm posting, and I do write either a quick recipe or just a little thought about that food. Twitter, I like to have conversations with people, you know, like, hey, I just saw you in the mall, Mom, and then see if they tweet back. And you know, the social media is important, and it, you know, yesterday or day before, a group of haters was busted through Twitter.
Really?
Yeah, they pulled a hate crime in Philadelphia, and somebody recognized them in an Instagram photo, and then they found that it was a Facebook check-in, and they went and arrested them at the restaurant before they finished dinner.
Good. Well, here's something else that's good, Greg. We've got a caller that is aching to talk to you tonight. Are you ready for your call?
I'm ready. Do I know them?
Okay. I don't know them. They just popped in and said, we want to talk to Greg. 954 area code, you are on the air live with Greg. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome. I just want to know if I'm caller number one. Do I win anything?
You win me. That is Marianne Williamson. Oh, my God.
The Marianne Williamson?
Yes, the Marianne Williamson. Those of you that know her, she is better than you
the
can imagine.
The blonde Marianne Williamson.
And she is the best. She is a lot of fun. She and I met through Polo, and now we spend a little bit more time together in Los Angeles, but we met in Florida, and she is hands down the funniest person I ever hang out with.
Well, yes, Greg gave me a lot of tips on learning how to cook. I made one meal with him and ended up with a broken toe. So that was the end of my cooking.
That's true, and I'm gonna be back in Florida in December, and she said she was gonna make a dinner because she had 9 toes left, and I said, oh honey, don't give away your whole menu.
I will. I'll try it again. I promise.
Hey, okay. Richard says you are hands down the best hostess he's been involved with. She entertains.
Really,
she set the most
really
beautiful
did.
Table. She made a standing rib roast. Absolutely stunning. We ate it over the Intercoastal Canal in Fort Lauderdale, and she's got the most cuddly dog, Kenny the little dog, and we just had a blast.
Well, I'm in Washington, D.C. now. Is there anything you'd like me to say to anyone here?
How's the government doing? Are you got everything under control?
Oh, God, please. I never get that far. I'm in the West End, so I stay at the...
Oh, Panama. I thought you were in the West Wing.
No, not this year, no.
Okay.
But
how's the Four Seasons? You holding that down?
Yeah, I've been to all my spots, and I'll be home at the end of the week to see Tim when he comes back from Milan. And I just want to congratulate you on your book and on your show, and I'm
Thank
so
you.
Excited.
Can
to
we?
See
can
you.
I tell everybody that you bought my first? You bought me my first book present, Valentino. Has a line this year of camouflage with accents of pink. And Marianne sent me a wallet from Valentino's line, and I carry it every day, and it has camouflage with little flecks of pink for the pink marine, and she bought the shoes to match it, so she's going to go with me on book tour.
Yes, I'm waiting.
That is
I'm
awesome,
waiting.
Marianne.
Daniel Ballude opened up a Daniel Ballude kitchen in D.C. It just opened this week.
Where?
I don't know. I'll find out, but it's paleo.
I'll go. I'll look it up. I'll go.
It says DBBG. I've written on my Go Greg Go restaurant review site. I've covered it. I've written a review of that place in New York, and he's opened one in D.C. So, that might confuse people. I review restaurants on Go Greg Go, but my main blog is Eat Greg Eat.
I was just going to say that. Okay.
And I have to tell you, I am just so jealous of your metabolism. I can't stand it. You do have the best metabolism.
I just stay busy. You know that.
Well, I do too, but it's not working. Anyway, I don't want to hold you up. I just wanted to say hello, and I'm enjoying the show, and I just could not be happier for you.
Oh, you made my night. You make my life. Thank you, Marianne.
Marianne,
right,
grateful to the call. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Travel
you
safe.
Bye.
Okay. Bye bye.
Love you. Bye, darling.
What
she's
great
awesome.
Surprise.
You might see her in some pictures with me on my Eat Greg Eat Facebook page. She is just too much fun. And then she introduced me to Tim Quinn, who is the head of Armani makeup for L'Oreal. He would have called, but he's in Milan right now. It's 4 a.m. I am developing a TV show with him, with Sean Dwyer and Kendall Clark, where Tim goes around. Tim's actually a cancer survivor, and we're developing a show for, where he goes around and makes over large groups of women in need. And so that's a project I'm in development.
That is awesome.
Tim, he already does that. He gives back so much. He serves on the Farrah Fawcett Foundation, and he gives back a lot. And now we want to show the world how much he gives back and organize it. He's going to make over groups of female veterans coming back from service. He's going to make up. He goes every year. He goes back and makes over his oncology nurses that took care of him in Boston.
How great of a story is that?
And he's hilarious. We're going to throw some cameras on him and travel around with him.
Well, another great project. Well, what else are you doing? You've also got this fantastic blog. What are you doing to sleep? Are you sleeping at night now, or do you have time for that?
I want to sleep as much as I can. I don't know. I live on East Coast time. I don't know if this is interesting at all, but I wake up at 5:30 or 6. As I said, my partner lives in Montreal. And so how I actually got ready for the cooking competition is really just how I live my life. We go through periods where we can't be together for immigration reasons for a month or 6 weeks at a time. And so I just adjust my body clock. And when Marianne says I stay thin, it's because I eat dinner at 4:00 every night. I get up in the morning and I write from, let's say, 6 a.m. to 3 p.m., and then at 3 p.m., my workday stops for a bit, and I put on a live Skype cooking show for my partner in Montreal, because it's 6 o'clock there, and by 7 o'clock, show's over, we've plated, we sit down and eat dinner together on Skype, and that is every night for
wonderful.
7 years, and that really got me ready. I don't want to out him, but he's Jewish, and so the cooking show kind of goes like this. I'm slicing and dicing, and all I hear is kibitzing. You're going to cut yourself. What time did you put the pasta in? You're going to burn the fish. And I had to go to a knife safety class and learn cooking knife cutting skills, because from his point of view, it looked like I was going to murder myself.
Oh, my God. Well, what do you like to cook that's for you? What's your favorite either type of cuisine, and how did you come to love that particular dish?
Well, the main person that influenced my cooking was my Aunt Kathy in Dallas, Kathy Shaw. I thought she was getting slave labor out of me. When I was a teenager, she would have me come in the kitchen and chop things and wash dishes and do all that stuff. And I thought for sure she was just getting labor out of me. And I thought, aren't there people that you can hire to do this? And then I thought, maybe she just wants it free. And
right.
Then I realized she was teaching me how to cook, and she was teaching me. She went to the Cordon Bleu in Paris, and she was teaching me how to make a bechamel and how to layer flavors. And so I learned. And now I love cooking the things that I know from her, but I also really try to focus on trying to live forever, because I have all these Bed Bath and Beyond coupons and they don't expire. And so I try to eat whole foods, a lot of fish, a lot of just simple whole foods, vegetables, fish, chicken, beef, and then I'm gay, so I watch my carbs. I think that you're given that warning when they give you the card. You get rights, but you do not ever get the right to have carbs.
No carbs, ever. Not even on your birthday.
No.
No.
Or you have to, give them back. So I try to cook.
Right.
I have a great recipe that I love. It's what I auditioned with for the Mark Burnett show. It's the dish that I make that I can spend time with my guests when I have them over for dinner, and it's fish and paper, and you saute leeks and put those down in a piece of parchment paper, and then put a piece of halibut or sea bass if the bones are out on top, and then layer some vegetables, some raw asparagus, some mushrooms, a little thyme, squeeze some lemon and salt and pepper, and then close that parchment paper pouch up,
mm-hmm.
and you can pre-make 50 of those if you have the refrigerator.
Wow.
And then
okay.
just put them in the oven when your guests get there, and in 12 minutes you pull them out, and your guests actually open that parchment paper package on their plate, eat it from that, and then you just throw that whole thing away. Not the plate, but unless you're green.
Clean up as a breeze.
And you get to spend more time with your guests because everything's been done in advance, and that's a great thing. I love making souffles. I have a friend that is a French countess. She's very old right now, Countess de Rochambeau, and she will not give you a recipe. She's a famous entertainer and a famous chef, but you have to trick recipes out of her. So you have to be eating something like lamb stew that she's made, and you have to say, I love the way that you – brown the chicken. And she has to say, I didn't use chicken, you fool, it's lamb. And then by the time you've asked enough wrong questions, you have her recipe.
That's classic. Now, do you entertain a lot?
Not a lot. I do entertain, I would say probably once a month. I don't know if that's a lot. And I also, because I write about food so much, I love going out to restaurants with friends to discover new things that I'll come back home and try to cook. But I need, you know, constant new blood. I'm a vampire diner. I need new stuff all the time. And I love chefs. I write about chefs and their commitment and their connection to food. I'm not interested in writing about a bad dish I had or telling you, shaming some restaurant and saying this place sucked. I have those experiences, but I would so sure. much rather spend my free time and the time that I want to tell the story honoring somebody that's really got a strong commitment and is telling a great story with their food. I love when a chef tells a story with their food and that connection that they make. So many chefs, it's a hard job. It's a hard business, and I want to celebrate it and really honor the things that they work so hard at.
So who's been either a chef or a restaurant that you've gone to, let's say in the last month or so, that's really surprised you in just an amazing
surprised
way?
Surprised me was Cut with Wolfgang Puck's Cut in Beverly Hills. And I was there with Marianne Williams, and it just called, and Tim Quinn. And I always want to say that the best meal I've had is one that I haven't had yet. But hands down, my dinner at Cut was the best meal, service, dining room, everything that I've ever had in Los Angeles.
Wow.
It cost about $20,000, but it was worth it. So
that
experience
mind.
Surprised me. I'm a huge fan of Wolfgang Puck. I've written about him a lot, from Chinois to Spago. Huge fan of his. I love his precision. I love what he's able to create. And no question. My favorite chef working right now is in New York, David Boulay. I love that guy.
And what does he make that really just curls your toes?
He reinterprets French food because his ancestry is French, but he's American, and he reinterprets French food in an American way, really clean, classic flavors, and it's just beautiful. And you sit in this amazing room in New York you are truly amazed, just course after course. He's brilliant. David Boulay, he's great.
Okay, so as somebody who is not very well versed in the art of French dining, is it customary that you have like a 20-course meal or dining experience when you're going out to a French restaurant? Is that what people typically get, or is that just something that I've made up in my head?
Maybe just 4 or 5, but I do have – I was in Berlin last summer, and I met a young chef named Kevin Alden. He's British. He's working in Berlin at an Asian tapas Latin fusion restaurant, and I had a 17-course tasting menu with him, and he's coming to L.A. this Monday, and I'm taking him to Scratch Bar on La Cienega. And that guy's doing a lot of great things. I haven't been there yet, but I hear he's doing great things. And so I'm excited to have this British, German, Asian fusion have dinner with him on Monday.
That'll be cool. So how many nights a week do you typically dine out compared to staying at home?
Well, I do the Skype dinner with my partner. I want to do that 7 nights a week that we're apart. But the benefit of doing that at 4 p.m. is I can actually have a bonus dinner. I can go out. If I have to go out to dinner at 8, I'm fine eating a second dinner. I'll eat a third dinner.
Okay.
And the if you buy it, I would say I'm out 2 to 3 nights a week.
Okay. I mean, so a fair amount. So it's a nice, you know, you get out, stretch the legs a little bit and get some nice L.A. air in the summertime. So that's a good thing.
I get so hungry. If you've been out riding polo in the afternoon, playing polo in the afternoon, you work up an appetite, you get starving.
Okay, so I think that's going to be the last topic I want to ask you about is playing polo. How in the world does a kid from Texas, a skinny kid from Texas, start playing polo? Where do you find a polo horse or polo pony or whatever you call them?
LA's huge. I rode as a kid, and then I rode in college. I rode English, and then here I was writing on a television show with Nancy Lee Myatt. We were writing on Powers That Be for Norman Lear, and she had 6 polo ponies at the time, and she said, "You should just come out and get on my ponies." And once you get up there, you are hooked. It's golf on horseback or hockey on horseback, so you're constantly striving to get better. I just play at polo. I am not – great, but I can do it. And so the I rode with her a bit on her horses, and then about 4 or 5 years ago, I got connected with the Gay Polo League, and so I play with them and coaches and things like that here in L.A. And they're in Florida. You have not, you know, lived. If they had given us polo mallets, we would have gotten rights a lot quicker.
Oh, Greg, you slay me. I'm telling you. I'm telling you. You have been a spectacular guest. Everybody, Chef Greg White, author Greg White, comedian Greg White, writer Greg White. What else can we say about polo? Writer Greg White has been on the show.
Well, and your guests can tell that I'm obviously extremely good looking.
Very good.
Always throw that
you
in.
Are by far the best dressed guest I've had on the radio with me this entire year.
I wore all this freaking Armani.
I know. You look great. Absolutely.
Well, I hope they find me on Eat Greg Eat everywhere. I hope that they watch the show on October 3rd, and I really hope that that they buy the book, my The Pink Marine. I'll let you know when it comes out. I'm looking at December 1st. I hope that's it.
Okay. So we'll be on, like, Amazon.
Oh, the TV rights went for the book, so it'll be a TV show.
Even better. Okay. I love it. So
for those too lazy to read,
show.
You can just turn the channel.
You can just turn the channel. And then catch Greg on TNT's new hit show, On the Menu, by Mark Burnett on October 3rd. Do you know what time it's going to be on?
It's on at 8 p.m. and 7 p.m. Central Time. And I have to tell you, Emeril Lagasse, growing up in New Orleans and a home cook like me, being in the kitchen with Emeril is life-changing. He gave me a tip about my dish that he learned from Julia Child.
Really?
Crazy.
And you'll have to tell us about that after the show airs, so... Maybe we'll have to have you back or something like that. Okay.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what's gonna happen with the way that the show's edited. I just hope that my hair looks great.
I hope your hair looks great because it looks great in the promo picture that we used for tonight's show. So we have that.
I have my priorities.
There we go. Everybody, it's been Chef Greg White. Catch him on TNT October 3rd on the menu. And we're going to round out the night with a little Levi Christ. We'll see you live tomorrow night with Eric Kamen, early Rated G Radio Friday Night Dance Party, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Flamenco guitar live. You're going to get it, but here's a little Levi in the meantime. Have a great night, everybody.
Thank you, Garrett. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
been listening to
Rated G Radio.